Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, 15% off your first order with code WONDERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 587. I'm recording this intro from inside a rental car in rainy Portland. It's really nice here in the fall. I came up to host an event called the High Ed Web Conference. It was really fun. Everyone was really nice. And now I'm I pulled over on the side of the road to record this. Actually, that's sort of true. As I'm furniture shopping for my house, I'm in a warehouse district, and there's an office furniture liquidation center. I don't know what I'm going to expect to buy in there or how I think I'm going to get it back to Los Angeles, but I just like old furniture. I don't know. So I'm going to go in and I guess I have to affect that voice when I'm looking at old furniture. Do you have any credenzas? Or a mimeograph? Technically, that's like an old-timey Xerox machine. This episode is Keanu Reeves. And Keanu was kind enough to squeeze the podcast into a press day for John Wick. And by the way, I hadn't seen John Wick at the time of this recording because it all came together very fast when I was in New York. But since have seen it, and it's amazing. It has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes and 9.3 or something on IMDb. So it's an awesome movie, and he's great in it. And he was a super nice guy. The only thing I will say about this is that he gave us all the time he had, which was literally a half hour. So I think this might be the shortest podcast we've ever done, but I'm not going to not talk to Keanu for a half hour. So we weren't necessarily able to go as in-depth as we normally do when it's like an hour, hour, 15 minutes, but he was still a super cool guy, and maybe he'll come back. Now that he's seen that it's easy breezy in old Nerdist Podcastlandia, then maybe we'll get Keanu Reeves back. So here we go, the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 587 with Keanu Reeves.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Nice to see you.
Good morning.
Very nice to meet you. And this is the beginning of your press day, I imagine.
It is.
So are you mentally prepared?
You know, it's easy to speak about a film that you love.
Yeah.
You know, so in that sense, yeah. It's sometimes it's not so easy, but today it's easy.
So you've been in that situation before, you're like, you know, I don't really feel...
Yeah, like, oh boy. But not very often.
Good. Well, you don't know, because you sign on. I mean, to me, the fact that a film ever gets made is mind-blowing. And the fact that a film can get made and be good is the secondary miracle can happen.
That's true. Yeah, you go in with high hopes and ambitions and dreams. And hopefully they're not shattered on the rocks of disappointment. But, Wick was one of the good ones.
I seem to recall, I don't know if you'll remember this at all, but this was like 10 years ago. But when I was first kind of doing a lot of stand-up around Los Angeles, I feel like you popped up at some comedy shows.
I used to go to comedy shows. Yeah, I just go.
Are you a stand-up? Are you a fan of stand-up?
I am, absolutely, yeah. Ever since I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah, I grew up in Toronto, Canada, and we had the Metropolitan Toronto Library, which was the big library. And I would go there and read plays and listen to comedy albums. So I would listen to, like, Cosby and Woody Allen. Nice. And who else was going? Richard Pryor. And then some of the 2000-Year-Old Man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen any of those guys live?
No.
Seen Cosby live? He still performs.
Yeah, he's still doing that. I've seen that a little bit YouTube-ish.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to go on there and see that. But yeah, I've always loved stand-up. Remember I saw Sam Kinison in 1986?
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That was like yucks. Prime Kinison.
Yuck Yucks in Toronto.
I performed there.
Yes.
Yes. It was, it's not there and it's not the same club anymore, but it was at like Young and Eglinton or whatever.
Yeah. We went down the stairs.
Yeah. It was like down in a basement.
Yeah, the thing, yeah.
I think a comedy club should feel a little shitty.
Seedy.
Yeah.
Seedy.
Yeah. Seedy.
Seedy. Yeah.
It should feel like you shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Like you're doing something, I don't know, not nefarious, but something clandestine.
A little subversive. Yeah.
A little subversive. But I remember when he came out and he did that thing and he's just like, move! You're in a desert! Move! I'm in hell! Kill me!
Move to where the food is.
Move to where the food is!
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, hey, kid.
You're
hungry?
Sand.
It's sand. It's looking sand.
It's going to be sand.
Oh, my God.
That's amazing you saw that live.
Yeah, I'd never laughed that hard.
I never got to see him live because I was just slightly too young and he died when I was in college, so I just never
saw
made
that
it through.
Firebolt. Yeah, he was amazing.
Did you ever fuck around with like live stuff that way?
I don't when I was a kid I did Second City.
You did?
Yeah, so I was going through the Second City training program, doing the Second City classes and stuff like that, and played theater sports, lost to Kids in the Hall.
Holy shit!
Yeah, played against Kids in the Hall.
Do they know this? Have you talked to them?
Got smashed.
Have you talked to them yet?
Yeah, we just got boo bricks thrown at us, and they got laughs. We got boo bricks, and they got laughs.
They have that... Was your humor... Because you moved...
I was like 17.
You were like 17.
17,
yeah.
16, 17.
But you moved a shit ton, right?
As a kid in Toronto, yeah, there was like 5 houses in a city.
Oh, man.
Which I don't think a lot of people do. Like, you live in the same city, but you're in 5 different locations.
But my family did the same thing.
Did you guys?
We moved a ton, all over the country, and then...
Well, not the country, the same city.
In the same city, we would move around a bunch of different places, too.
Was your dad shifty?
My dad, well, my dad was a professional bowler. So, in as much as bowling is shifty, then yeah.
It's almost like the comedy stuff.
It is.
It's a little subversive.
It is. Bowling is very subversive.
It's a little kind of part of the carny.
But now there's so many like super nice bowling alleys where it's like now that's all hipstery and like hand carved wood. It's like no, this should be shitty, and there should be a sense that I could get killed in the parking lot.
Right? Yeah. Score drugs, get killed, have a one night stand.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
It should feel
even
kinda,
with the kids there.
It should feel kind of gross.
Yeah, the beer.
It should feel kind of gross. Listen, I don't want to embarrass you by telling you this, but I was at a party years ago, and you were just sitting on a chair. I don't know why I was at this party because I'm not a party person,
right.
And so I immediately was just like in the corner, just uncomfortable. And for some reason, you were sitting on this chair. And this girl came up, and I don't even think you knew her, and she just sat in your lap and started making out with you. I'm like, whatever that is, that's what I want.
I'm a slut. I'm a slut.
I think your improv training kicked in because you yes-anded the approach.
Yes,
and...
indeed, yes. Yes, and. Continue, please. I won't say no.
That was amazing. That was such an amazing
moment.
I must
have known this person.
I'm assuming it, but it's just that I was there for a while, and then you just kept... He almost looked meditative, and it almost looked like, did he just summon that person out of the ether? This is incredible.
I have magical power.
You do. Well, that is an amazing power. I have been a fan of yours for a really long time, and I think, I mean, obviously, I was the perfect age for Bill and Ted's, like the absolute perfect high school age.
That was funny.
Amazing. Amazing. But... I thought you were so incredible in Parenthood.
Oh, wow.
That was such a great...
It was a lovely role. A kind of nice innocence to him.
Yeah.
A nice positive energy. Yeah, and worked with Joaquin Phoenix at the time, too. He was like 11 years old.
Just when he was still Leaf Phoenix,
yes,
right?
Yes, he was Leaf.
He was a tiny little Phoenix.
Yeah, he was a little Phoenix waiting to grow. Like,
and then he burned the ashes of Leaf and reemerged as Joaquin.
Yes.
So is it, do you like doing comedy? Do you want to do, is comedy something that's important to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't had the chance to do it for a while. I mean, I did a romantic comedy called Henry's Crime a couple of years ago. But other than that, I haven't. Yeah. Yes.
Because River's Edge, not really a comedy.
Not, but funny.
But funny.
But funny. What I do for my fucking friends. You could fry for this. Crispin Glover, genius.
Crispin Glover, he's been on the podcast. He was a really interesting. Yeah? He's a really interesting guy.
I haven't seen his movie. Have you seen any of his films?
I haven't seen. No, I haven't seen the one that the most recent one. But he's just, his whole thing now is he just wants to make these pieces that just make people react,
right,
in very specific ways.
Right. Wonder which ways those are. It's, I don't know. So provocative.
He seems happy.
Yeah, he's just a, he was a remarkable. He's a remarkable original cat.
What do you do when you literally... I'm jumping really fast because I know you don't have a lot of time, so I apologize. Normally, we could, the conversation breathes a little bit more, but so I'm going to jump around a lot. But when you can essentially do anything you want...
That's not true.
You don't think so?
No.
Why?
No, you can't. You can't do everything you want. I mean, making, if we're speaking about... making films, telling stories, I mean, putting, you know, you mentioned it earlier, to make a film is a kind of miracle. You know, I mean, certainly there's opportunities and stuff, but it's not like that girl who sat in your lap.
Right.
You know, where...
No, she sat in your lap. That never happened to me.
Yeah, in one's lap. You know, I you can't quite do that, you know, but you can try.
So is that just, is that a myth then? It just seems to me that... that people, that every morning you wake up and then there's a platter of scripts and you're like, you know, I feel like this one today.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work like that for me. You know, you still, you know, I mean, there's scripts that come by and things, but you know, even if that happens, then you still have to try to put it together. Or if it's put together, then well, then it's easier.
Yeah.
If someone sends you a script, it's like, well, we have finance.
What?
Yeah. Well, yes! I'll have the king crab leg. But yeah, I mean, it's there's always something to be done.
But it's a painstaking process, which it seems requires the utmost patience. Of all the platforms in media, film, to me, seems like it's the most maddening, because it can take 5, 8, 10 years for something to get made.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is collaborative. It's so collaborative in the telling of the story,
mm-hmm.
and it's so collaborative in terms of the financing. It's like show business, and like to get all of those pieces together, even before the artists show up, is tough.
Do you like being on the producer side too, or do you also sometimes just like, I just want to come in and be an actor and not have any responsibility than that.
Yeah. I mean, the past few years, I've done a little more producing, and I've really enjoyed it, and I want to keep doing it. But there are times where you just, you know, want to wear one hat. But, oi. it's who, whatever.
Are you a stressor, or are you pretty good? Are you pretty good at being kind of zen about everything?
No, I'm not zen about anything. I'm kind of I'm a fretter. I'm a concerner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think this business attracts fretters, but then also it also does the worst things to people who fret at the same time?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
It's passion.
Okay.
And maybe there's a particular kind of personality trait to that. I mean, the creative act or producing or anything that, you know, it takes, you know, a particular kind of focus and attention. And, I mean, even when you hear stories of people who don't sound like they're focusing and attentioning that much.
Yeah.
It's probably not true.
Everyone's in it. I mean, I just feel like we spend so much time...
in our own heads.
Isn't it great?
No, it's not always that great. No. Sometimes, like,
it's a house of horrors.
Well, it is. And then you're like, why am I spending so much time in my head? I'm still in my head talking about how I'm in my head. Like,
yeah.
How do you get out of that? Or how do you take time? Or how do you shake it off?
Yeah. Nowadays, probably just go for a motorcycle ride.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, go for a motorcycle ride, breathe, drive kind of fast. and then, and also spending time with friends and family, you know, like mm-hmm. just let's go do something.
Yeah.
You know, that helps.
Focusing on other things.
Yeah, and just try to smell the roses. Did I just say that?
You did.
Isn't that awful?
It is. Listen.
That's just really
It's
terrible.
A lovely grandma thing to say.
It is.
It's adorable.
I'm older now.
Would you like a hard candy?
Would you like...
Oh, yeah. But you look amazing,
but
though.
That's the thing. It's the suit. The suit's...
It's not, it's not the suit. It's not the suit. The suit. No, no, no. Suit.
Believe me.
Does the fame stuff get annoying? Does it get in the way?
None of the work or the life of it. For me, the impact is really just, you know, someone taking a picture of you while you're putting gas in your motorcycle.
Or the said Keanu meme.
Which was fantastic. and then, like, maybe once in a while at an airport, there's some crazy... But, I mean, it's whatever. No.
But you seem to have a good... I mean, I saw your Reddit AMA a handful of months back.
Oh, right.
And it was really nice. Like, it seemed like... I don't know. You were really cool and playful with it. Uh-huh. And it seemed like, you know...
Oh, yeah. Well, that's... You know, that's just having a conversation of a kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you internet-y?
Yeah, I like conversations.
Are you internet-y?
I'm once in a while-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have a lot of social media.
Right.
So, yeah.
It is like an extra job.
It seems like it's a job that people love, though.
Well, it is, but it can be fun, but again, it's all... I just feel like culturally we're creating these little bubbles that are forcing us to just stay in our heads all the time. You know,
because
I don't mean to be complaining about it. I mean, I like social media, but I mean, we're essentially... You know, your face is either in your phone or you're this far from your screen and you're, how did my picture do that I posted? And what are all these people saying? And what is it? Like, you were just creating these weird little isolated, narcissistic bubbles.
Communications.
But I don't know.
How could it be narcissistic if it's going out?
Because it is going out, but
it's you.
But it's through the lens of you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
the people want to know about you.
I don't know.
And they want to share with
you.
They
want to know everything.
They want to share. They want to be entertained. They want to have some insight. Come on, man.
I know,
it's
I know.
Connectivity.
Ugh.
Get on it.
Come on.
Wake up.
I'm trying.
You haven't Twittered or something.
I know. I should tweet this right now.
Yeah, oh, my God.
I remember being at a... I was hosting some sort of a screening or something, and I think it was like 1999. And it was for... I don't remember what the movie was. I think it was a Harold Ramis movie. I think it was for Analyze This. And before that, they were showing the movie to college kids at UCLA ahead of the release to promote it. And it was then the trailer for The Matrix. It was the first time had seen the trailer for The Matrix. And this isn't it wasn't a pre-internet era, but it was pre-mass consumptive internet. So it's not like trailers were all over, you know, online all the time for everyone. And people were still using AOL a lot at the time.
Right.
And the trailer started, and it was a time where people just didn't have any idea what it was yet.
Right.
Now I feel like that's impossible. Everyone knows every little everything. Yeah. And the trailer started, and people were kind of giggling, what's this? And then halfway through, there was if this makes sense, a deafening silence because people's mouths were like... And it was just one of those moments where... And I always feel like... I wish I could go back and experience that movie again for the first time.
Because
it's one of those films where you just are like, what the fuck? Yeah. Did you have any idea when you were making that was going to be the case?
I didn't know how it would be received by the audience, but the first time that I read the script, you know, just because of the ideas and the setup, you know, the Matrix and this alternate universe and agents and... you know, discussing, you know, concepts and controls and, you know, the kind of philosophical underpinning architecture. But for a nerd who just learns how to fly, I thought it was I really great, you know. And when I met with the Wachowskis and they showed me a picture book of all of the concepts and stuff, and then when they said, we'd like you to train for 4 months to learn movie kung fu, I was like, yeah, okay. So I knew that there was stuff going on. I just didn't know that the audience, how it would look or what it would be.
Yeah.
So when I saw it, it was great. It was like, my gosh, these visionaries have created the vision. You know, seeing the bullet time, the production design, and this, I mean, and now all the performance. So it was pretty.
But you can't, like, going in to that, you can't really go. I mean, if they go, yeah, and then you're going to do this, and this bullet's going to whiz by your head, and you're like, okay, I guess that sounds fine. How are you going to do that?
Yeah. Well, they had done a pre-viz, so they had like this kind of version of bullet time where the camera moved and they had this gunshot going through a barrel of fire. And so they had an idea of what they were doing. I mean, they knew what they were doing. Just no one else knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
And then we found out. And it was like, yeah, the movies! Yeah! Because, I mean, I felt like that when I saw Star Wars. I remember the trailer for Star Wars when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And I just was in this theater. It was a university theater. It was a really great screen in Toronto, big screen. And I was just like, what is that? What is that? That looks cool. So,
and we don't get
that. Not like that, but I mean, it is like that. It's like, well, you get excited about going to a movie and like, what are you going to see and something. Like
we don't get many of those I feel like in our lives anymore. Like, I just, because we've seen so many things.
Yeah.
To have that, you know, and I think that's why people are so rabid about spoilers, because we're so desperate to have some kind of a special
inside
something. Yeah, something that totally changes the way that we see everything.
Mmm. I know, but then there's filmmakers, right? You got to go to Soderbergh, you got to go to Fincher, you got to see Nolan. You know, there's filmmakers that you always want to go.
What have you not,
Von Trier?
What have you not done yet that you want to do? Is the list infinite, or do you have specific plans?
I don't have any. You know, I'm still trying to make, you know, working on making certain projects, but in terms of genre, or I'd love to make an impossibly romantic musical.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you want to sing? Do you want to?
Who doesn't?
I know you're a music. I know you're a bit of a band for a long time.
I always have this vision in my head, like some kind of like, yeah, some impossibly romantic. It might have to be now an older man story, but about love and loss, and Paris.
Yes,
something classic. I know it sounds tropey and genre-y, but I want to do it someday, somehow.
That's the best reason to do anything, if it sounds fun to you. You don't want to do it if they're like, hey, here's a pile of money. And you're like, yeah, fuck it, I'll do this.
Yeah, I'll spend my pile of money.
Who's in it? Kate Hudson? Fine, I'll do it. Oh, no! Romantic comedy.
Yes!
But I mean, if it's something that you really want to do, then you should absolutely, you should just do it. That's the best reason.
We're back again to passion.
And then, listen, if you wanna throw in some, like, you could have, okay, so imagine.
Oh, and I also want to make an even more violent, crazy movie called Berserker.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to do some, like, just crazy, like, just over the top, just fucking.
All right. Do you want money for that or give me money for that? Just make it. Just fucking make it. Let's make it.
I know.
No. Berserker starts off as a romantic comedy. So the first half is a romantic comedy. And then you shift genre like halfway through.
Right.
And then it becomes fucking crazy.
Berserker, man.
Yeah.
Just Berserker.
And then an alien at the end lands and then something happens. It's loose. I haven't really worked out the
details. I did that, though, in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
And you did.
And that kind of went a little jump the sharky.
You think so?
With the station?
Station. People still reference Station.
No, come on.
No, I'm serious.
I love Station.
Station. People still reference Station.
It's just
Station.
So amazingly twisted.
I think
anti-something.
I think Bill and Ted, I think Bogus Journey was awesome. And I think Station
first
totally
holds
up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
What am I missing? No.
But you can't. You know, made it. So,
I made it.
Like, it's hard for you to judge.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Do you think... We don't have a lot of time left with you. And there's so many... God, I want to delve in more.
Yeah.
What can we do in 4 minutes?
I don't know. Did you see the movie?
I haven't seen it yet. They sent me the link last night, but I was working until late.
Ah, oh, fantastic.
We asked for it for days, and then it finally came last night. And it and the way that the systems work now is that everyone's super protective of the links.
Right.
So I got the link at about 8 o'clock last night while I was
You're
working.
Busy. And You're
then
doing stuff.
It was like, you have to sign in, and then when you sign in, you get a text, and the text gives you a code, and then you have to enter the code and sign on, and they're logging. It's like, it's a really intense process. And I've been in New York for 48 hours, and I haven't stopped working since I got here.
Working. Yeah. I mean, but does your job make work kind of social?
Sort of.
But no.
Well,
no.
I just juggle. No. I work on a few different things, so it's,
yes.
So everything is... My schedule is all planned out. You probably have to...
Yeah, yeah. How are you going to break free, Chris?
I don't know!
What are you going to do?
I'm going to make Berserker with you, this movie where you murder everyone. Do you feel in general... I'm just curious from the sense of... Because you moved a lot as a kid and I moved a lot as a kid. Do you feel not settled in any place for any period of time? Like, I always feel like after a couple years, like, I probably should move.
Yeah. There's a little bit of the gypsy kind of... We're wounded.
Is that it?
But the wound is our gift.
Is that... We're supposed to do something good with that.
Yes. No. Yeah, there's a little bit. But then also... I mean, if I'm coming off of a job, if I've been working, it's so focused and... So then I don't get that wanderlust or that kind of jittery thing for at least 3 weeks.
That gives you plenty of time to settle for a few weeks
yeah.
and just unpack, and then slowly,
yeah.
when the last item comes out, then you put the first item back in.
Yeah,
and
then it's time to go.
And then take off.
That's just the way it is.
Do you live in any... Do you stay in any one city for any period of time?
Yeah, I live in Los Angeles, and been there since 85.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, there is that thing of, yeah, what's next and what are we doing?
You have to be, I feel like you have to be careful what you joke and say, because I think it may have been with my company, I think you joked about making another Speed, was it? Or another Point Break or something?
Okay, yeah.
And then everyone was like, is it really happening? Like, I think he was fucking kidding.
Yeah. And then it happened.
You made it?
No.
Oh,
someone else did.
Oh, well, they did a sequel, but then
yeah.
but you could do
no.
Okay, let's kill those rumors now.
Yeah,
no more Point Break. No more Speed.
No.
Berserker.
Berserker, just where you punch people and it comes, you know, through their chest and out their back.
And then during a musical number, and then you rip away,
and then you sing,
and then you kiss the girl sits on your lap and kisses you.
Yes.
And I feel like that's a perfect place to end. This is what the podcast felt like. This felt like an emotional lady sitting on our laps and kissing us.
It's a good day.
I hope you have a nice day. And I hope... I'm super excited to see John Wick, although I'm bracing emotionally because of what happens to the dog.
Yeah.
But you need that so that you can totally go crazy and fuck people up as much as possible, I would imagine. You need that counterbalance.
You do. You need to have a reason.
And that's more of a reason. It's good to see you, man.
It's a fun movie.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Sir. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.